Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Joining me in studio for his monthly visit, Attorney Don Luce of Luce Law Group, with offices, a beautiful office here in Tucson, and they haven't been in the Phoenix office, but I'm sure it's beautiful as well. Don's giving me a thumbs up. Mr. Luce is the Buckmaster Show legal contributor, author of two very popular books, Arizona Laws 101, A Handbook for Non-Lawyers, and Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know. Both books are in their second printing. Don, how are you?
I'm great, Bill. Thanks for having me back.
Hope you and your family, your lovely family, had a lovely Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving is my favorite holiday.
Oh, is that because you like to eat?
That's part of it. but truth be told, it's the holiday of least expectations.
It really is. Yeah. No gift giving, just everybody getting together. Tucson is no longer in danger of being fiscally penalized for its COVID vaccine mandate for city employees. Don, this was an action that State Senator Vince Leach, Republican from Tucson, was pursuing.
Right. And interestingly, this process where a legislator can request the Attorney General to make an inquiry or an investigation has been around since 2016. It's not widely used, but when it is used, it provides a potential severe penalty for the city that might be found to have violated state law. In this case, the city of Tucson, had it been found to have violated state law with the vaccine mandate, would have faced the loss of about $100 million a year in revenue sharing.
Big time money.
Well, it is big time money, both relatively and absolutely speaking, for the city. But as you pointed out, Senator Leach withdrew his request that Attorney General Brnovich investigate whether the vaccine mandate was contrary to state law. Now, there is a lingering issue, and it has to do with the city's policy with respect to employees who request a religious exemption. Okay, so the standard is if an employee has a sincerely held religious belief, then the city is required to give that employee an exemption. And in fact, according to the data that I've reviewed, about 10% of the city of Tucson employees have received exemptions.
So, really?
While there's a 99% compliance rate, about 10% of that has to do with employees who have claimed exemptions and have been granted exemptions and are not vaccinated. So the actual vaccination rate is probably less than 90%. But the state and the city have different views about, I should say, Senator Leach and some of his cohorts have different views about how the city has to address a request for exemption. The city's policy is that there will be an interactive process to determine precise limitations. I think Senator Leach and the people in his camp believe that it needs to be, if a city employee claims an exemption, that employee has to be given an exemption. And it's really difficult from an employer's perspective, whether you're a city or a private employer, to determine what is a sincerely held belief.
Yeah, that would be my next question. This is very subjective, Don Luce. Subjective.
It has to be, because a belief by nature is subjective.
Right.
You can't objectively verify whether someone truly believes what they say they believe. Mm-hmm. So from an employer's perspective, again, whether you're a city or whether you're a private employer, if an employee comes forward and says, I have a sincerely held religious belief, my best advice as a lawyer would be, you need to take that as a presumption that that is true. If you have an indication that it's not, then that's another case. But in most instances, there is no evidence to the contrary. And if the employee claims a religious exemption, then I would say in the vast majority of cases, the employee should get a religious exemption.
What about medical exemptions? Do they have to be vetted and followed up with a, or have some kind of a physician verifying that there's a medical problem.
That's a little bit different because the medical exemption comes in under the American with Disabilities Act. An employee who claims a medical exemption oftentimes will have some objective supporting material. An employee who claims a religious exemption by comparison oftentimes doesn't have anything other than them saying that they have a sincerely held religious belief. But a medical exemption is recognized under federal law, and an accommodation must be made if it is all practical to do so.
Let's switch gears. The so-called audit that was carried out by the Arizona Senate, this has resulted in a couple of legal items that we want to bring to our viewers, our listeners' attention. Why don't you begin with one of those? I think it's pertaining to this Cyber Ninjas, the firm hired to lead the Senate Republicans' unprecedented election review.
Yes, that is the name of the firm. And by the way, I found it interesting that just this week, the attorney for Cyber Ninjas told a Superior Court judge that the firm itself is insolvent and wouldn't have the ability to comply with the orders, even if it was ordered to do so. Now, here's where we are. There are two lawsuits brought against the Senate and Cyber Ninjas for records and data and emails and text messages and thousands of other documents that are possessed by the Senate, Cyber Ninjas, and people who are affiliated with them, including sub-vendors. So Phoenix Newspapers, which prints the Arizona Republic, and the other plaintiff is a group called American Oversight, have asked the courts to require the turnover of all of these tens of thousands of emails, text messages, and other documents. And the Senate has said, no, we're entitled to legislative privilege with regard to those materials. Because they were part of a process, right. A legislative process, and so we don't have to turn them over. It's sort of like the equivalent of executive privilege that we've been hearing about with the former Trump administration officials who have refused to testify or provide documents before the U.S. Congress. At the state level, the Senate is saying we're entitled to legislative privilege. Now, the problem with that argument, at least according to the two trial judges who have heard similar cases, is that it doesn't apply to processes that are not part of the deliberative process. So if the legislature is communicating regarding maybe changing a law or they're involved in some other deliberative and communicative process, what they say or exchange by way of information might be subject to a privilege. But this had, according to the trial judges who've heard these two cases, this had nothing to do with that. This was the engagement of a third party, Cyber Ninjas, and many sub-vendors. To essentially count ballots, which is not a legislative function necessarily.
Right.
They weren't considering at that point changing any laws by reason of that recount. So the judges have said that the privilege doesn't extend. And one of the judges even said, well, you got another problem, and that is you waive the privilege. You had so many live stream broadcasts and public discussions by Senate representatives and public hearings during and after the review that even if there was a privilege, it's gone. You know, because you can't pick and choose. You can't choose to disseminate certain information and then withhold other information that has to do with the same subject. Either you're going to assert the privilege and release no information, or you're going to waive the privilege, in which case all of the information is subject to scrutiny. So what's happening currently is that yesterday in one of the cases, the Court of Appeals heard arguments by the Senate and Cyber Ninjas about the trial court's ruling, because as I mentioned earlier, they have lost at the trial courts. So they're now before the Court of Appeals. In the other case, which hasn't made its way to the Court of Appeals, the trial court judge, John Hanna, said that because this is likely to go all the way to the Supreme Court, you know, potentially, I'm going to put my ruling on hold to give the Court of Appeals and perhaps the Supreme Court time to review the boundaries of legislative privilege. So nothing has been turned over yet, but the writing on the wall doesn't look favorable for the Senate or for Cyber Ninjas in terms of being able to withhold the tens of thousands of text messages and emails and other
documents.
Who
would go through all that material? My goodness.
Well,
if you're talking about tens of thousands of emails.
Okay, so I think we can all agree that politics plays a big part in these types of cases. In fact, there's information to suggest that the ballot review alone cost about $9 million. Hmm. And about $6 million came from political groups led by Donald Trump allies, according to reports.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So when you're talking about that kind of money and those kind of political issues, they'll find people to go through the emails.
Yes. So what we have here, the big picture, would be ultimately the Arizona Supreme Court reviewing the boundaries of what legislative privilege is in the state of Arizona.
That's right. And I think, my opinion, having read the basis for the trial court's rulings, I think that the trial judges are on pretty solid ground in saying that if it's part of a deliberative and communicative process, then the privilege applies. If it's not, it doesn't. And in this case, because you had third parties, you know, you had Cyber Ninjas, which is not part of the legislature, and then they had vendors themselves who are not part of the legislature, and information was being shared and exchanged between all of those parties, privilege doesn't apply. And so I think there's a very good chance, and ultimately the courts will decide, but I think there's a very good chance that these text messages and email exchanges between all of these parties are going to be made a matter of public record.
All right, Don, we have about a minute or so, and I want to talk about your book, Estate Planning in Arizona. And the reason I want to bring it up now is it's the end of the year, and it's a good time to get your house in order. I mean, not that the rest of the year isn't a good time, but this seems to be a focus for many people the end of the year.
Well, there is a reason why we have New Year's resolutions.
Yeah. Yes.
So here's what I'd like your listeners to know. You're absolutely right about there's never a bad time to think about this, and it doesn't need to be tied to any calendar event or holiday. But if you become disabled or incapacitated, you want to make sure that you've provided the game plan for your family. You want to have a healthcare agent, for instance, appointed so that a guardianship or conservatorship isn't necessary. And you want to be sure that if you pass and you have children, that provisions are made for your children to be cared for. Mm-hmm. And in many cases, this involves the appointment of a guardian.
Mm-hmm.
And it also involves the creation of a trust so that those funds are then used over a period of years to provide for the children's health, education, maintenance, and support.
Well, people think it's very complicated, and probably to non-attorneys, it might feel that way, but this is something you and your team do every day.
We do.
So, and try to make it as simple to the client as possible, but it's serious stuff.
It is. And as you pointed out, though, it isn't that complicated.
Okay.
The concept itself may seem overwhelming when you talk about all the various documents. But at the end of the day, what you're doing is you're pre-planning. Mm-hmm. You're saying that if this happens to me, this is what I want. If that happens to me, this is what I want.
All right. Don Luce of Luce Law Group. Thank you very much, Don. Always a pleasure. Have a wonderful holiday
season.
Thank
you, Bill. You too.
All right. That'll do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of attorney Don Luce, Goose and Tom Fairbanks, the birthday boy plus one day. Have a great day. Dave Ramsey is next.